Good morning and welcome to Listen Local, the bi-weekly webcast from neighborhood news source Mission Local. I'm Laura Wenis. Today's guests are from a group that's producing stories about homelessness with a very intimate perspective. They're calling it Stories Behind the Fog, and with me today to give us an inside look are Dia Guha and Nermeen Habib. Welcome, you guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Dia, if I understand correctly, you're the main producer of this program. Tell me a little bit about how it got started, and if there was something about the coverage of homelessness that you were seeing out there that you wanted to do differently or do better.
Mm-hmm. Good morning. So this project started with a movie called Moses, which has been 10 years in the making. A Spanish filmmaker followed this one homeless gentleman for 10 years, and through our interaction, we kind of realized that human interaction, getting to know their personal stories, we can help people come out of homelessness. Because stories are powerful and stories help people relate to their conditions, right? So then we decided, okay, we're going to make a movie, but what's next? There are over 7,000 people homeless in San Francisco alone. So we decided to create this project, which is collaborative. It's called Stories Behind the Fog, where we are telling stories of 100 people who have been affected by homelessness. And we are trying to bring out the reasons behind homelessness, like either addiction, eviction, mental health issues, through stories. And this project, Stories Behind the Fog, we started 2 years ago. We have collected 90 stories, working with over 10 nonprofits in the city. And our goal is to get to 100 and publish a beautiful book and as a fundraising tool for the nonprofits itself.
Mm-hmm. Was homelessness something that you encountered a lot, or why was this the issue that you decided to pour so much of your time into?
Actually, it's funny because I'm from India. Poverty and homelessness, I was very immune to it. But coming to the tech capital of the world, literally, seeing homeless people was a stark reality. And that's what got me very curious. And my involvement with the film, spending time with Moses, who was homeless for 30 years, wow, kind of opened my eyes, and I got more involved and wanted to do more about it.
Mm-hmm. And Nermeen, tell us a little bit about how you became involved in this project and why this is a topic that you're drawn to.
So like Dia mentioned earlier, when I moved to San Francisco a couple of years ago, I think the first thing I saw on the streets was this issue of homelessness. And to me, it was a cultural shock, I guess. It was just really staring me in the face. So I got in touch with Dia, having known about Stories Behind the Fog, and I really wanted to get involved as an artist and a filmmaker. And I collaborated with Dia and the team to create a trailer for Stories Behind the Fog, and that was just really fun to shoot.
And what's in this trailer? How do you make a trailer for a story about 100 different people?
So basically, we got in touch with about 10 people, and this trailer was a glimpse into their stories. And we picked lines that were very personal and sort of gave a viewer an idea of how these stories can be complex and complicated and sort of generate interest to know more about their stories.
Has it generated that interest? Have you seen interest spike recently?
And it's funny, Laura, because this is a time for video content, right? Short and sweet, because these stories are like 2.5 pages long, and we do have 5,000 followers reading the stories. But the minute we published the video, people were engaging because suddenly their faces, they were coming alive to them,
mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, that's great. That's great that people have responded in that way. This is a lot about, I mean, when I read these stories, I've spent some time on the Stories Behind the Fog page reading through these. You really do get sort of pulled in. And I think that's because of the voice that comes through. Mm-hmm. I mean, the way that you produce these, it very much keeps intact the way that the person speaks and the way that the person is interacting with the reporter or the artist or whoever is collecting their stories.
Correct.
And tell me about the process of doing that, because I imagine that it's not just raw what comes out of the interview, the transcript that gets put onto the page. How do you produce this?
So first of all, what we do is we identify the stories to the nonprofits. That's how we break the ice, the trust, right? Because if somebody asks me today that, hey, tell me your life story, I'm not going to be very compliant. So, and we make it not very journalistic, like a conversation. So it's not a monologue one way. And I start with not just like, why are you homeless? Like, who are you? Where were you born? What school did you go to? What were your dreams? What did you want to be? Because these questions are not asked to these people, right? And then kind of I boil it down to, why are you here? What happened, right? But I try and they bring out anecdotes so that we can relate to the stories. And then what we do is we transcribe our writers. We have a team of 7 to 8 writers. We transcribe word by word. And then we put together the puzzle and figure out a narrative. So there's a lot of creativity involved as well. And another thing is, these are first person stories, right? And we want to stay true to their voice. And I think that's what makes it more compelling and powerful.
Yeah, certainly. Nermeen, do you have the same experience?
Yeah, so when we were shooting the trailer, I think the biggest challenge was how do we stay true to their personalities and bring through their personalities on screen so that people identify with their different characters and their backgrounds. And I think some of the best shots that we got was when they thought the camera was not rolling because they were like more relaxed, they were themselves, and we got genuine emotion and like Dia said, we were telling stories to each other. We were just having a conversation about sports, about art, about life, your favorite food, that sort of thing. And that was a gateway to let genuine emotion come through onto the screen. And I think that was the biggest challenge, but also the biggest success, so that we keep their personalities intact and project who they really are.
Yeah, that's certainly what comes through in the pieces that I've seen, is that intactness, that emphasis on the person as an individual. And it does make me wonder, I mean, for one thing, this is, you know, clearly something that helps people empathize with people who are living on the street. It shows you an incredible spectrum of what kinds of people are on the street, and it makes it much harder to assign a reason for someone being there. But I do wonder if you've come across, you know, people that didn't really want to collaborate with you, didn't want to give that sort of insight. People who maybe had stories that do, you know, fit the stereotype, and whose backgrounds were difficult, or whose personalities were difficult.
Yes, I've had those experiences, because I, especially at the Mission Church here, through Gubbio Project, I basically would go at 7 a.m. People are sleeping, kind of wake them up and like, hey, do you want to talk? Oof. And, you know, have coffee. So I've had interviews where it's like 10 minutes versus 1 hour. But then what I've also done is followed up, again, show up. It's like persistence. I again show up next time. It's 15 minutes of conversation. So you're building a friendship and a relationship. But I've also had, I'll be honest, Laura, it's not easy to go talk to somebody on the streets. I'm not expecting everybody to do that, because I've had like violent reactions as well. I've been chased down the street.
Yikes.
It has happened to me. So no, because there are, and that's what made me understand, like, you know, these people have mental health issues. They don't trust. Then I'm scaring them more than them scaring me. So there's a way to approach your body language, your empathy. So that's why we'd like to partner with nonprofits. It gives us, me, my photographer, my writers, a safe haven as well to conduct these interviews.
Yeah, absolutely. What happened? Why was someone chasing you down the street?
I just approached the lady, like, because she was very unique. She had flowers sitting right on Market Street, and I thought she was a very interesting personality, an older woman. And I guess she was having a bad day, and I reached out to her and like, hey, my name is Dia, and I would like to talk to you. And she looked at me, she asked for money. So I normally never give money at the first go. I said, I can buy you something, breakfast. Let's have a conversation. So she got up and she started yanking my bag and started grabbing me, and I got scared, and then I walked away. I said, okay, I'm sorry, let's just walk away. She followed me down one block.
Yikes.
But things like that do happen.
Yeah. Well, so then let's go the other direction, and why don't you tell me about a person whose story really surprised you or really touched you, or somebody that you personally felt really connected to when you spoke to them. Nermeen, did someone come to mind for you?
There are several stories, but I guess there was one story that sort of felt very close to home. just because her story began with her moving to San Francisco to get a degree, and that's why I moved to San Francisco. And it struck me that this could really happen to anyone if you're in the wrong time, wrong place, and sort of everything went the wrong way. She reminded me a lot of myself, and she had big dreams, and she had this sort of idea of what her life would be like in San Francisco, and it completely turned south, and she's in a very different place now. So that story was extremely personal to me.
Yeah, Tia, do you have one as well?
Oh my God, so many, but there is one. I think Mission Local published her story, Queen's Story. So I met Queen, this African-American 31-year-old girl, exactly my age, and she moved here from New York with her boyfriend, Love. And because of domestic violence, she just couldn't stand it anymore, and she ended up on the streets. And it resonated because I also left home because of troubles at home with love, boyfriends, and I started a new life. And she wanted to do the same in San Francisco. And she can't go back to New York because her parents won't accept her back because she ran away. And she's an artist, so I'm also an artist. And she loves photography. I love photography. So you end up kind of relating yourself so much to these people. And I've been touched. And she got a job. She got housing. And wow. She sends me texts. And it feels great. It feels really good.
When you had these encounters where you felt like someone's story was very similar to your own, do you get the sense that this also helps folks connect to you, that they have the same experience with you?
Yes, because that's how you know, it's like having a conversation with you. If we go out for a cup of coffee, the more we relate, we'll start opening up to each other. And that's our goal during the interviews, like be personal, be friendly. Things that they're uncomfortable talking about, let it go. You know, you can always come back and have a conversation again.
Yeah, I think having these conversations really opened up a window for a relationship to happen, and empathy from both sides. And I think this was something that when I watched the trailer after we finished shooting and editing, for a moment I forgot that these people suffered from homelessness and were affected by it, because they had stories just like my stories or my friends or my family. So they were just people telling their stories, and for a moment you forgot that they were affected by homelessness. So yeah, I think that was interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I'm thinking about this project and just the sheer number of people that you're talking to, and I think it's safe to say that probably Dia, at least you, probably Nermin, you as well, you've talked to more people living on the street than most people who normally pass living on the street ever will. Mm-hmm. Does a common thread emerge? Is there something that you find is very usual for people to have experienced, or for people to need, or for people to say to you? Can you see any trends?
You mean the people on the streets?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a pattern. It is a pattern. It is kind of a vicious cycle. Like, I do talk to so many, but also so many I walk past by as well, you know, like, because I'm always scouting. Like, I've jumped out of a bus and I've seen a homeless family and I'm like, hey, I want to talk to you.
Wow, that's dedication.
But that's also the project, because we are trying to cover all spectrums, right? There's so much of family homelessness, there's prenatal homelessness. So yeah, there is a pattern to it for sure.
And what's that pattern? What have a lot of people seen or experienced, or what has happened to them?
First is, a childhood issues, not a strong family background, no stability, addiction. There's a lot of addiction. And then also like a big pattern that I've seen with family homelessness, they lose their jobs, they lose their home, they don't have a solid family who's going to take them back in, they end up on the streets. So people ask, why didn't you go get a job? So they keep saying, yeah, you can't go for a job interview smelling like this. I can go work, but I don't have a home to come back to. There are not enough shelters. I have kids. We are living in a car. So that's the pattern. You give them a job, but you have to give them a home. If you give them home, if they have mental issues, health issues, so many have health issues, you have to address every need. Not solving just one issue is not going to help.
Mm-hmm. Naimeen, is there something that you see as a common thread?
No, not yet, because okay. I'm still learning a lot about the different situations that sort of lead people into homelessness. But I did go through a phase of very different emotions. And to me, I think working on this project as a filmmaker was also a healing process for me. When I first moved to San Francisco, I was in utter shock. The first question I would ask myself is, why? Where are these people's families? Why have they left their family members on the street? Literally, some of them looked like they were rotting on the street. So that, to me, first I was shocked. And then I started to become angry a little. Angry at the system, angry that people seemed like they didn't want to help themselves. Just a feeling of anger and a lot of negativity. And then I guess came empathy, where I wanted to hear their stories. I wanted to share their stories and understand myself. And if I can understand, then maybe I could be part of the solution, through telling stories or through something maybe even bigger down the line. So I think it's, a journey of learning for me, so far. So I'm not really sure if I've seen any patterns yet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I mean, when you're talking to a diverse group of people with diverse backgrounds, of course, it's not natural that necessarily a pattern would emerge, but I'm curious which ones have. The other thing that I'm curious about is where the people that you've spoken to are now, if there are any whose situations have dramatically changed. You know, you said you've talked to families.
Yes, I've talked to families. A lot of them have actually, the nonprofit, that's how I kind of follow back, follow up with them, like, hey, how are they? How are they doing? And we established relationships. A lot of them did get housing. Few people that I interviewed had severe mental health issues, so they're getting that care. And a lot have gone back on the streets. You know, so I think it's some make it and some don't, but you got to keep trying and going back to those who are not making it right now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Is there anyone that has stood out who is just like an amazing success story that you were like so happy to hear that they've been able to succeed after what happened to them?
Let me think. Yeah, actually, there's this woman who I met. She's very interesting. Her name is Charlene. I met her at prenatal homelessness. And she was pregnant. She just gave birth, actually. And she used to work at Facebook as a security. And she used to, when she was heavily pregnant, didn't have anywhere to go, she used to sleep in Facebook's office. And then they helped her, actually Facebook staff, they helped her, and prenatal homelessness helped her. And right now, she wasn't sure if she wants to bring a child being homeless. But then this nonprofit gave her the resources, put her in a hotel for 1 year now. And she's completely capable of getting a job. She has help with childcare. So she's doing pretty well.
Wow. Wow. It's amazing also that, you know, it. First of all, what it takes personally to go through that, I'm sure, is an immense effort and an immense drain. But also that people around her sort of managed to provide some help that was sorely needed.
It takes a village, right?
Yeah, in this case, really. Naimeen, does anybody stand out for what has changed for them since you spoke with them?
I really connected with James. He's an artist. And once we were done with shooting, he asked me to help him build a website, reach out to Oprah. He had, like, really big dreams.
Reach out to Oprah?
Yes, he wants to tell the world his story.
Did you succeed in reaching out to Oprah?
We're still working on that. But just his ambition and sort of big vision for life is, to me, success, great success, because it's miles away from how he used to think. And now he has a lot of hope and vision for himself. So that's a great story.
Actually, I follow up on that, James. I forgot. Yeah. We did give a talk at Creative Mornings in San Francisco. And a lot of the audience, they were so inspired. And a lot of James was present in the crowd. And two of these creative designers, they are right now assisting James to digitize his graphic novels.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah.
And when will they be available and where can we get them?
I don't know.
We don't know yet. Okay. Well, everybody stay tuned if you want James's graphic novels. I was wondering also if you have both traveled at all since you've been working on this, and what you've seen in other cities, and whether you have this impulse to go and talk to people who are living on the street in other cities now that you've been working on this for so long.
Okay, I'll go first. Yes, I did travel quite a bit. New York is another place. It's another animal, I feel. But I think I'll get a little local. I go to suburbs a lot here, south of San Francisco, and there are less people on the streets. I see only few people under freeways, and I've stopped. But the population there is not very visible and stark as what you see in opposed to a city.
Mm-hmm.
I did speak to few, but they were not very, they didn't engage as much. They just wanted money. And that was it. It was never like, hello and thank you.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I'm sure that visibility is different in different cities. I mean, both of you already mentioned that, you know, when you come here, I think everybody who comes here for the first time observes, wow, I see a lot of people living on the street. I see a lot of people living in destitution or who have mental health issues or whatever it is compared to other cities. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you guys have any guesses about why that might be here as opposed to in other cities.
Being in a city, this city provides, right? Because there's somebody, people have interviewed, they have told me that you must be really stupid to go hungry in San Francisco. They have told me because, A, there are so many, like St. Anthony, there's so many soup kitchens. Yes, there are shelters, but not as many. But you can still find haven, like in public library. There are so many people just sitting there reading, accessing computers. A lot of teenagers here, young adults who are, you know, traveling around, and they're like, yeah, this city provides, you know. So there has been issues like, are we enabling them, or should we put our resources into getting them out of homelessness? So, yeah, it's a difficult thing.
Yeah, Nermeen, do you have any thoughts on why you see that more here than elsewhere?
I've thought about it a lot. I don't think I have a solid answer yet, but mm-hmm. I would.
Well, I don't think anyone does. To be fair, like nobody can put an exact reason for this. But what are your thoughts on?
I think it's a combination of things. Like Dia mentioned, yes, maybe there are a lot of facilities or people, organizations who do provide food and shelter. I also think it's the weather. It's not freezing cold and it's not boiling hot. So.
Not like Chicago.
Yeah. So I guess that helps. And I guess San Francisco sort of just built a reputation for itself that it's sort of like a hippie place to be. And I guess if people think of moving, then they by default just think of moving to San Francisco.
Yeah, it's interesting that you say that because so many people are, on one hand, so frustrated with the homelessness here, and there are, you know, some people who have more harsh opinions about how the city should deal with them. And on the other hand, there's, you know, always concern that no matter how easy it might be to get food or to survive here, like you said earlier, giving somebody a job or solving one problem is not going to solve their homelessness and is not going to get them off the street and make it less visible. I mean, it seems to me like that's something the city has been struggling with figuring out how to do, is to really solve this problem entirely. Do you, either of you have a sense of how well the city has done on finding new solutions? Is there anything that the people that you speak to that stands out to them as something that's particularly helpful?
I feel personally the recent Tipping Point's donation of $100 billion and is a big boom.
Sorry, $100 million, right?
$100 million, okay, yeah. $100 million. And then the new navigation centers. Because it's like one place you get all, you can get help with whatever you need help for.
Mm-hmm.
So the navigation centers are helping, and I think we need more of them. And mostly when I ask people the stories that I'm doing, like what will actually help, you know, it's funny. They will say, yes, I need a home, or I need this, I need a job. But I think it's way more spiritual and philosophical, because they say that, well, we just want people like you to come say hi and acknowledge the fact that we are here. We are not invisible. You know, I think that's the beginning, stepping stone to acknowledge that this is not okay. These people are just like me and you.
Yeah, I've heard that a lot too when I'm talking to folks who are living on the street. Like, just say hello, just make eye contact, don't ignore me. I'm still a person. I mean, did you have any thoughts on that also?
I think one of the biggest, or the sort of, yeah, the biggest issues that need to be addressed is affordable housing. San Francisco is one of the most expensive cities to live in the world, yet it has a huge homeless population. So I guess balancing that out would be a challenge, to find affordable housing. And speaking of just coming up to people and speaking to them on the street, just yesterday I was walking around the city with a camera, just, you know, something I like to do for myself. And I got to speak with a very interesting character called Spaceman. And
is he from space, or is he going there?
He's dressed in a suit.
Okay, so he's going there.
Yeah. Yeah, so he was just really interesting. And he was asking me, where are you from? You look like you're African. I'm African too. And I said, yeah, I'm Egyptian. I'm from Africa too. And we like bonded over this idea of being from Africa, the homeland. And it was just an interesting, funny conversation. And he's like, give me a hug. And I gave him a hug. And it was just really nice to speak to someone on the street and have like a conversation you would have with anyone else.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Well, this is a great note to end on, I think. But really quick before we do that, how can anybody who's listening who's curious to find out more find your project? When can we expect the book? And what else is in the near future for you guys?
I would encourage your listeners to check out storiesbehindthefog.com. Right now, we need help with publishing the book, so we are doing not crowdfunding, we are seeking donations which are tax deductible. And stay tuned for our movie, which is going to be released next year. The link is moses.movie. Yeah.
Okay, Nermeen, anything you want to plug?
Yeah, what she said.
Okay, well, Nermeen and Dia, thank you so much for being with me today.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you for having us.
We'll be back 2 weeks from today with news and narratives from the neighborhood. If you'd like to get in touch, shoot us an email at info@missionlocal.com or on Twitter @MLNow. Up next, it's Back to the Music. Keep it right here on BFF.FM. Thanks for listening.